Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So we have the Media Project this week. We have a couple of editors ready to take on Dr. Chartok, so it's going to be good.
I'm ready.
It's going to be good. Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, is here. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette. Judy, howdy.
Here and ready to rumble.
Ready to rumble. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Really, folks, it's going to be a serious, substantive program. We're not going to
fool around, except I want to mention one thing, if I may.
Go, feel free.
You are both sort of the archetype of the modern editor.
Archetype.
You're both thin. You both have...
That has
of,
to do with... Thin. How about that?
You're tallish. You
anymore?
Both have sort of graying countenance about you. And you're both tougher than nails. So I don't think people know that about you both.
No.
But you are tough, tough people. Mm. And I think in your jobs, you have to be tough, don't you?
Yeah, especially more now, I think, than there used to be. You need to have some sensitivity to human beings because part of your job is leading a staff, and so you can't just be a jerk. But, you know, you have to be kind of tough because people complain to you about telling the truth, right?
Yes, and you have to be decisive and confident. And you don't, not confident, you know, falsely. You have to know what you're talking about, have to be able to listen. You know, it's true that the modern editor is different than the editor that I probably first worked with, who had
a hat and a ticket in it.
It looked like Lou Grant. I think it is more of a, there is some more consensus in a newsroom nowadays than there was 30 years ago.
Newsrooms are not nearly as contentious, right? People are always amazed when they come in to visit our newsroom and it's quiet, and our afternoon meetings where we decide what's going on the front page and so on are civil. Nobody's yelling and thumping on the table.
So what are the intervening variables, if I may interrupt? So in other words,
being a PhD,
I'll say a couple of things that I have a feeling I'm going to hear on the other end. For example, the role of unions in the newspapers has gone down substantially, I think.
You know, I think it's... I think there are, from my perspective, I think there are more women in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. I think there are less...
You're avoiding the union
fewer
thing.
Fewer dirty jokes.
Well, she's never had a unionized newsroom,
no,
right?
So
it hasn't ever made a difference there. So that couldn't have been a factor for her. That's interesting. More women. That's a thought.
But I also think things have just changed. The perspective on what is news, where we should get our news, it's not the same quality. And we're newsrooms in my shop is more like a classroom oftentimes, where you're just trying to teach people.
Well, you know, it is also just the different expectation of people at a different age, because folks don't like to be pushed around by their bosses anymore. It's a really different era than it was 40 years ago.
Well, what does that mean? Could you put a face on that for me, Rexy?
Yeah, you can't just go up and be a jerk and tell somebody...
Do it because I say so.
Do it because
exactly.
I say so, and people have an expectation that they will be able to care for their family. We make a lot of accommodations for people's time. We will give people, folks can take the time they need to go take care of a child care issue and so on. It used to be that you had to, I remember a woman, a contemporary of mine, whose husband was a New York Times reporter, who worked so hard that in the middle of the night once he got up to take care of a kid who was crying, and the dad was so fatigued from the work that he tripped and fell, tumbled headfirst down a flight of steps.
With the kid?
No, the kid was on his way to the bedroom, and he was just out of it. And the woman running down the stairs to see if her husband was alive, she was saying, damn the New York Times, damn the New York Times, because she was so convinced that it was the newspaper that was having this effect on her husband.
But do you guys, and also, I hate to say this, to inject this into it, when I talk to you as tough people, you have had downsizing in your papers, And there's nothing harder in the world than to let somebody go, isn't that so?
Certainly. And in fact, it's what it has done for our newsroom. It's brought a new reality about what the business model of a newspaper. That we care more about how many ads are in the paper now than we did, you know, a generation ago, that we don't want to see our colleagues walk out the door. And so we have a new respect for advertising and
for getting the money
and what we're, yeah. What we're
well, well, that raises an interesting question, of course. I'm sure you realize what I'm going to ask next. If the advertising is so important, are more accommodations made by a news organization in order to get those ads?
Well, we are probably more receptive. We certainly are meeting with advertising not advertisers, but with people in our company. We are devising what the magazine industry used to call environments for advertising. Now, you can't tell me that the New York Times, for example, needs to have a second lifestyle magazine, T Magazine, that big fat lifestyle magazine that comes in the Sunday paper once a month. That is purely created to draw high-end advertising, and there is, incidentally, editorial content shaped around it. That's not an editorial decision. That's a commercial decision.
And the Wall Street Journal has it, I believe.
Absolutely.
And
there's
the other one that comes to our house on Saturdays. Anyway, but it has a wonderful, wonderful magazine, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But those kinds of decisions we participate in. We think about, you know, what kind of thing is useful to our readers. It's not that we're giving away our news columns to advertisers. We're thinking, what kind of material is useful to readers that, incidentally, would also draw advertising? Yeah, that's a good thing. But more, I think more than specific advertising, what Judy's talking about is the way you approach your coverage. You can't just throw copy into the paper and expect that it's going to draw enough financial support to fund your newsroom going forward. This is why we're now putting our best content behind a paywall. Times Union Plus is available to subscribers or to people who pay the initial fee is 99 cents a week. But the best journalism now, we're expecting people to pay for digitally. And folks have gotten accustomed to just having everything for free on the internet. And, you know, no business can survive by giving away its content, by giving away its products. So, you know, that's a recognition. And it's hard for us in the newsroom to accept because we want a lot of people to see our work. So that means that some of our content is not going to be seen by people.
I get it. But, you know, I'm fascinated by what Judy said, because if there is a sense on the part of everyone that we can't have jobs if we don't have advertising, and there's a sort of...
Can't have WAMC if you don't have underwriting.
Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I have just recently, not to divert, but I have recently done 10 promos for our air saying, we know that, you know, you have a business. Certainly the underwriting helps the business. But at the same time, we know this is a great way of helping the institution that you love. And darned if it isn't working. Darned if people aren't.
We should try that too.
Take a whole page
out. Don't you love your newspaper? Come on, advertisers. Give your money because you love us.
Take a whole page out in the paper and do it. I don't mind. I think imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Or better yet, we should appeal to our readers. If you love us, give us a little more love.
A little more love. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sorry.
But Judy's point is extremely well taken. And now you have people who might have in the old days say, don't infringe. There's a Chinese wall between, you know, advertising and the rest. These are people who might be a little bit more sympathetic and know what the stats on newspapers are right now, which are not good.
But are you inferring that that's influencing our coverage? Because that's not the case.
No.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that is not the case.
Actually, yeah.
No, I mean, if we've had this conversation on this program before, you know, if you could shape our news coverage by the threat of withdrawing advertising, we would have some huge advertisers in the paper who are not there anymore.
And that certainly does. I mean, there are advertisers who have been unhappy with stories, who have withdrawn their money, and we just take it because that's what we're supposed to do.
We just absorb what she means is we don't just take it.
We
wish we could just take it.
I remember here at Public Radio when we would do stories on a certain market, the owner of the corporation would regularly have his secretary call and say, I want a copy of that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all know who that is, but we're not going to say it here.
Oh, okay, because you would offend that person.
No, because sometimes not having a lawsuit is a good thing.
Yeah, not, you know, I think we all run into situations where you think about what you're doing in the context of lawsuits, certainly. I mean, we do pre-publication review by lawyers all the time.
So do we, by
the way. And yeah, it's a very good idea because it can save you from not only lawsuits, but more frequently, it saves you from bad journalistic decisions, too.
Well, look, there's some very bad people out there with a lot of money, and they amuse themselves. They can amuse themselves by, you know, harassing you with a lawsuit. And this gets to be very problematic. If I could just ramble on for one more second here. I knew a reporter for one of the local television stations, passed on now. She was furious because she did a story and she got accused and the insurance company sold her out. They sold her out because they didn't want to have, you know, a $50 million lawsuit on their hands when they could pay somebody off a couple of $1,000.
Yeah.
And she was infuriated because it came down to her reputation that was being sold out because the insurance company just operated that way.
But it really wasn't her being sued. It was the company being sued.
Yeah,
so there, it was their decision to settle.
Yeah, but for something she allegedly did.
Sure, certainly.
Well, you'd have to wonder. It's interesting.
Two old ladies are on the boardwalk, and one says to the other, my son sent me to finishing school. And the other lady says to her, what did you learn in finishing school? And the other lady says, who's going? Said, I learned always to say interesting instead of BS.
This is media at WAMC.org. If you want to offer your thoughts, I'm Rex Smith with Judy Patrick and Alan Chartok on the Media Project. You know, everything we do as journalists doesn't make any difference if you can't get the product to people. If your transmitters go down, if the tower falls on WAMC, or if your newspapers don't get delivered to the doorstep. And that was a huge problem this past week for the Boston Globe, which has an independent company that delivers papers in some of its area. They switched vendors, switched to California-based company called ACI Media Group, and it was a mess. The company didn't hire enough carriers in time for the handoff. The routing software spit out bad delivery routes. And so people were really ticked off, didn't get their papers. And so what happened? The newsroom stepped in. Reporters and editors stepped in and delivered the papers themselves.
Whoa, cool.
How about that? Isn't that something?
That is really cool. And I, along the same lines, I have to say, you know, I get here at 4 a.m., so I'm usually the person who picks up our wonderful Times Union from you, Rex, and brings it in. Somebody got real bad aim because it was about a half a block away.
So these delivery issues are a very important part of the newspaper. It costs us a lot of money to deliver the newspaper, but also brings in a lot of money. And there is the trend to outsource this in this fashion. And this is an example of what can go wrong when you outsource. When you have it insourced, although we use private contractors to deliver our newspaper, we have greater control. It saves money. Oftentimes these contractors will do it cheaper, but then you have these kinds of disasters, which one of the great things about the newspaper is you can rely on it to be on your doorstep every morning.
And we all know
but when in the morning? That's my problem.
I think it's before 6 o'clock.
We guarantee 6 o'clock delivery.
No.
Yes.
Well, I can tell you the Chartocks who live on Hollenbeck Avenue in Great Barrington, sorry about that, Roselle, usually can't count on our paper being there till 8:30, quarter to nine.
What paper is that?
The Berkshire Eagle.
Oh, well, that's
which, of course, I write for.
Control that.
Newspaper because they have a wonderful column.
Well, I'm sure they do. Well, and the Berkshire Eagle is produced in the Berkshires, so that shouldn't be, they should be able to get it to you earlier.
Well, but you're recruiting these people to do this work is very hard.
It's very difficult. And if the paper is laid off the press, these people generally have other jobs and they will abandon their route and take off. Or this season of the year, it's really hard. Carriers get their Christmas tips and they quit. And
that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
This is the high season of the year for abandoned routes.
So wait until you get tipped, and then you scram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, what we ought to do is add $1 a week or whatever. You know, we don't give $52 tips, but we could give 50 cents a week.
Well, you should give more than that, actually.
Judy is looking at me
very strange. You know, if you talk to an old paper boy, they will talk about how they would just walk down the street and throw a paper to every single house. But nowadays, it's not every single house usually on the street.
It's a much harder job. And the paper boys, we used to, when these were afternoon papers, and you would say, what product hands over its product to 12-year-old boys to deliver? But I'll tell you what, the 12-year-old boys were a lot more dependable than the grown-ups in cars are these days.
Oh, the cars are terrible. I have a torn rotator cuff. I don't want to tell you guys all my problems, and I'm going for physical therapy for it.
Oh.
So we are not going to be able to hire you to do this.
Well, no. This kind of repeated motion could really be bad to make a torn rotator cuff.
That's right. Well, this is why we don't hire people your age, Alan. So, That was sorry.
That's interesting, Rick.
Had to get a little something there.
Sort of ageist.
A little ageist there. Well, anyway, a big disruption there in the Globe and that company. By the way, one of the interesting things is the collaboration among newspapers. Judy's and my newspapers overlap in some areas, and we deliver, our companies deliver each other's papers those areas.
Smart.
Oh, isn't that something?
But when it first came up, that this issue came up, we're going, oh my God, no, we don't want to do anything
to
help them.
Yeah, can't do that.
But it made financial sense.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing how that happens.
Amazing,
isn't it?
So there's the standoff out in Oregon is something that we just ought to talk about here. The group that occupied the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. I give it the French pronunciation because it means unhappiness. The question is, this group occupying them, what do we call them? Are they militia? Are they armed ranchers? Are they domestic terrorists?
Are they thugs?
A favorite term that is being used to actually perhaps convey racist intent when it's mostly used by people like Donald Trump, we think.
Oh, is that right?
That's a lot
I've
of
always
the
thought
theory.
Of thug is some guy who wore a Sluggo sort of hat. Remember Sluggo, Sluggo and Nancy and Sluggo hat and sort of had bald head and was not necessarily of color. So, you know, I just don't want anybody to think if I use the word thug, it means anything but the old version of thug.
This is a good example of words really mattering. I think if you use the word militia, it does give them an element of credibility that
because
the gun rights and people think of militias
as
government.
Yeah,
militias are
militia.
Really usually government sanctioned, you know, and so that's an issue that we ought to be clear. These are people who are behaving lawlessly.
Well, no, I don't want to get in, put my political science hat on and constitutional law and all of that. But it is interesting, however, that the whole question as to whether the court was right in saying anything goes, basically, on the Second Amendment was around what is a well-regulated militia? Is that a militia that is called up by the government, or is it a militia that these people who might be called thugs are out there saying we're just militia, and therefore we fall into the Second Amendment? Don't you see?
Yes, it does actually go right into that decision. And by using the term militia, I think it's too loaded a term. Better to just be really descriptive and say armed ranchers. And on your editorial page, if you want to call them domestic terrorists or thugs or whatever you might
thugs,
want to call them. But in news stories, they are armed ranchers who have taken over federal land to demand financial redress of some sort.
But the question then for us on the Media Project is, how's the press playing it? I mean, are these people who might be called thugs getting more attention? If they were black as opposed to white, would they be seen more likely as terrorists where the police would go after them?
You know, early on, there was really strong criticism of the press for not covering this. But how did people know that it was even happening in the first place, that they knew because of the press? It also happened over the holidays, so that was a time when a lot of people weren't reading newspapers or paying attention to the news. I think it was covered from the beginning. It has grown over the last few days, but there was substantial criticism early on about the lack of coverage, which I thought it was there.
But you know, Judy, you raise a very interesting question. Somebody calls a high school and says there's a bomb, and the press reports it. The high school is evacuated, and then there's a call for never, ever telling those stories, because if you do, you'll get copycatters, which you do. And then we can see that again and again. We see it with mass shootings, for example. Somebody thinks that they'll go down in history if they're able to do something as terrible as Sandy Hook or something like that. So are we responsible for censoring the news ourselves?
Well, you have to. It's hard to tell the difference between a simple evacuation due to a bomb scare, which we have often been asked not to report about, and when something turns serious. It's really hard to tell these days, you know? You never used to think that when schools were evacuated at a bomb threat, you would never have imagined that they would, that it would be real, right, 20 years ago. And now, if you see a school being evacuated, your inclination is to go ahead and post it right away. And that's problematic.
And also, it's an issue of play, because probably you would do a brief in the newspaper, in the printed paper, you would do a brief explaining there was a bomb threat, unsubstantiated, just to let the people in the community know this is what happened and this is why the kids were taken out of school. But on the web, you're putting it up right away. It's probably at the top of the page. And so it's giving it an element of sensationalism that it wouldn't normally have in the printed product.
Well, the other problem, Judy and Rex, is that we want to know about things. If you live in a small town and you see that the high school was evacuated or that an ambulance went flying, or five ambulances went flying through, you want to know why those ambulances were there.
That's true. And so that's why you go right away these days. You know, people actually say they want news to be faster, even if there's a risk of it not being accurate. People
right,
will
sure.
respond that way, that they want to know what you think you know rather than necessarily what you really know.
Well, that's Rexy, ridiculous. Just look at what the North Koreans did with the alleged hydrogen bomb.
Right.
I think that there has been a substantial change in the reporting on what that might have been. From the beginning, it looked like they had done a hydrogen bomb. Now it's looking like maybe it wasn't a hydrogen bomb. It was just a nuclear bomb of one kind or another. And then you ask whether or not there's a guiding, I hate to be conspiratorialist about this, but whether there's a guiding hand, which is, okay, yuck, yuck, we're going to tell the world, these guys don't have it together. They don't have a hydrogen bomb. I can just see that little creep sitting there saying, oh, well, you know, now we have to really show them. So, you know, what the press does is important.
Right. I think you have to report the initial speculation, but as long as you label it as that, as saying that, you know, that it'll be weeks before we know actually whether it was.
Turned out to be a day before they started reporting that it really wasn't.
And even the early accounts, I thought, introduced this element of doubt.
Yeah, I think so. I think they did. You have to report what people are saying, what the experts are saying. Gee, it may be a hydrogen bomb. So you can't fail to report it, but you do have to report it with a certain amount of skepticism. Yeah. And I think that they did a pretty good job of that.
I love doing the show with both of you because you're such apologists for everything.
Here it comes. Here it comes. Hey, Judy, we have to ask you, a significant difference at the Daily Gazette these days is you don't see that little bug that says AP. This is a phenomenal event we would have thought in previous years for a newspaper.
Yeah,
you've dropped the Associated Press.
We have dropped the Associated Press. We have been members of the Associated Press for more than 100 years. I went back into the archives to try to find out exactly when we joined, but I only went back to 1900 and went on with my day. So more than 100 years. We have dropped the Associated Press. We really are a strong believer in the AP's cooperative mission. So all these newspapers gather together and then we share news, and they have their own news gathering body and they've covered the whole world. But it became far too expensive for us.
And for us, we do it, but it's very expensive.
And we have replaced the Associated Press with the New York Times News Service. We're using the Washington Post, Bloomberg, McClatchy Tribune has a number of stories. And remarkably, my readers do not seem to care. I have had a couple of readers worried that my replacements would be too liberal. I'm getting a lot of feedback because along with the end of the Associated Press, we've lost our stock pages. So I have a lot of older people who do not have computers who relied on those stock pages, and I've gotten about 20 calls on them. But the Associated Press, people do not seem to care about this. We are supplementing, and also one of the big reasons we continued with AP all these years is their state coverage. And so we will do a lot of that in-house and develop those kinds of sources. AP has had its own challenges in terms of the amount of revenue that comes in. I don't want to bash AP, but for us, it didn't fit into our budget. What we were getting from it didn't justify the cost.
Mm-hmm. So this is another example of the changes in the industry. This would have been revolutionary a few years ago. A newspaper editor couldn't have thought of this, but the Gazette is not the first newspaper to take this step, and I bet you'll see more of those because it is, even for a modestly sized newspaper such as Judy's and mine, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you know.
Indeed, and as Judy just points out, and we have this with NPR to some degree, pretty soon this cooperative relationship, which you put something together, ends up that the tail is wagging the dog.
Yeah, but you drop NPR, you will drop your listeners. They listen for that morning program. That is very popular.
Of course, and that's why we don't.
Good.
But I thought I'd mention that it's terribly, frightfully expensive.
It is. You know, what can you do? Folks, give money. That's what you can do. That's the Media Project. Judy and I are going to try this, by the way. We're going to say, if you love our newspaper enough, give us more money. We'll see how it works for us, if it works for you.
Sure. After you get your not-for-profit status.
Exactly. Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith, thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Interesting people, when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.
Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143.
Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.